All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
It's extra time.
Shoots and it's a goal.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, and today I'm joined by podcast regular, podcast MVP really, Doogie Critchley. How are you, Doogie?
I'm good, thanks, Pat. I've got my new t-shirt on today. It's Ronaldinho, and it came all the way from Latvia, and I'm quite disappointed with it actually, but I was just like, I'm going to wear it today anyway. I waited about 5 weeks for it to be delivered. And you know when you're just a bit underwhelmed with a piece of clothing?
What's underwhelming you about it? Like, what were you expecting?
I don't know why, but I think the colour just fits a bit weirdly. It just doesn't really work. I'm not a massive fan. I probably should have gone for it in grey, but I'm just going to stick with it today on this Friday.
Well, I'm enjoying the combination of it and your prison hairdo.
Yeah.
I've got to say, like, as... among the Football Daily team, I do think that you probably carry off the shaved head better than most.
Well, I've also got more necessity to as well.
Sure.
I think, yeah, the baldest member of the team. I find myself quite intimidated by myself. I sometimes catch myself in the mirror and I'm just like, whoa. Gray seems to like it, which is the main thing. Maybe I'll keep it for a bit longer, but it's definitely the time to try these things.
Yeah, well, so long as Grace is into it, I think that's basically fine. Now, obviously, this week's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the big transfers of this summer and potential alternatives to them. So we've talked a lot about Sancho and Werner and Koulibaly, but instead what we've done today is find some alternative players if your club can't afford those guys or if you assume they're going somewhere else. But before we get into that, a little word from our sponsor. We've teamed up with beer52.com. By now, you should know them. They're regular sponsors of the podcast, and they are going to be your friends as the weather starts to get nice this summer. Obviously, you still can't go out to a bar or a pub, so why not bring the bar or the pub to you by signing up with beer52.com/extra, and for $5.95, which is the cost of postage, you will get 8 craft beers. Now, Beer 52, they're a subscription service. Once you sign up with them, you'll receive a new case from them every month. They've got 150,000 members. And what they do is they theme each week's box. So past themes have included South Korea, South Africa, New Zealand, and you'll get beers themed around that particular place. Obviously, as well, there's the UK craft beer scenes. So if you want ones from the UK, then you can get them from here too. And of course, if you don't like dark beer, you can actually select a light option. So you'll only get lighter beers. And I certainly feel that, like, this is a time of year where I'm not sure I necessarily be wanting a dark beer. I kind of would prefer a nice Weiss beer or something a bit airier for the summer. But included in your case, you get the award-winning beer magazine Ferment and a tasty snack. Of course, if you change your mind, if you sign up, you can do that anytime. You can cancel your account at any time. But the key thing here, beer52.com/extra, and you get a case of 8 beers for $5.95. That is incredible value. Dukes, have you been drinking much in lockdown?
I have, actually, for shame. I think it's a good way of getting through, to be honest. But I'm a little tired of the sort of traditional beer brands. I'm always looking to try something a bit new. So I think I might get involved with this Beer 52 offer, actually.
Yeah, that's, I think, the annoying thing, that I kind of want to drink more, but the only things that are readily available are... not necessarily that exciting to me.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I think it's kind of nice to have like a subscription service where it's going to turn up on your door and get you smashed.
For sure.
Right, so that's beer52.com/extra. Thank you very much to them. And let's move into our major topic for the day, which is the transfer market, of course. Now, Dukes, I gave you some players to find some replacements for. So where would you like to start? We've got Jadon Sancho. We've got Ben Chilwell. We've got, let me scroll down, we've got Thomas Partey and we've got Kalidou Koulibaly. So should we kick off with Chilwell, actually? Because he's in the news a lot this week. Obviously, Chelsea heavily linked with him. £85 million, now the rumoured fee. Linked with Man City as well. But I don't know. Like, I really like Ben Chilwell. I do like him. But 85 mil for him, I'm struggling to see it. I was looking at his numbers and they're not that special. Like 2.7 tackles and interceptions per game. He still gets dribbled past a reasonable amount. Key passes, pretty good, 1.2 a match. 0.7 dribbles. So I was kind of looking at this and I thought we should be able to find some alternatives to this guy on the cheap, because 85 mil is, I mean, I want like a world-class player for that. And Chilwell might be that, but I don't know. This summer with financial limits, I'm not sure I'd do it.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of in agreement with you. I think he's had very good games this season, particularly that game against Southampton when Leicester won 9-0. I thought he was phenomenal in that game. But then in actual fact, in 2020, this calendar year pre-lockdown, I thought he was exposed in quite a few of the big games. Didn't have a seemingly very good game against, I think it was Man City.
Yeah, they really targeted him.
They really targeted him. And I was just a bit concerned by that, because I think, you know, at Chelsea, with the expectation you're going there, if you're being bought for pretty much a world record fee, you're expected to instantly improve that side pretty considerably for that sort of amount. So I think there are other options out there. The guy I want to bring to the table isn't probably in Chilwell's league yet and doesn't have that experience. It's Owen Vindal from AZ Alkmaar, who's 20 and he's an academy graduate there. And he's had a phenomenal year, actually. He's already capped four times by the Netherlands. He's come through the group, the youth teams there, I should say. And under Arne Slot this season, who got promoted from their assistant manager, he's suddenly given this new wave of AZ youngsters a lot of game time, like Coop Miners and Stengs. They're actually the only two, and Baudou as well. They're actually the only two, Coop Miners and Stengs, that is, who have played more minutes than Vendel at left back. He's played in all but one of their Eredivisie games so far. He's got one goal and six assists to his name. And he's actually a pretty solid defender. So he makes 3.5 tackles and interceptions, which rises to 3.8 in the Europa League. And this is for a side that in the Eredivisie is averaging close to 60% possession. I think it's only Ajax, who are notoriously, you know, very possession heavy, that dominate the ball more. But he also brings a bit of attacking flair as well. 1.2 shots per 90. 1.6 key passes, not that many dribbles, only 0.9, but when he does choose to do it, he's pretty effective. So his decision making is pretty good. He completes about 65% of them. But it's really his sort of passing that sort of interested me the most. So for a left back to be completing 88% of their passes and over 50 a game is pretty rare. So I think he does have a really good skill set. The only issue is his contract runs until 2023. And he's got a current market value of 10.8 million. So I think he'd cost about 25 probably, because they are pretty proud of Vindal and they're pretty excited about his progression over there. But AZ have been known to deal around that sort of fee before. Obviously, it was a couple of years ago now, but they sold Vincent Janssen to Spurs for 18. Jahan Bash went to Brighton for, I think it was 17, rising to 25. And then they sold a guy to Spartak Moscow even, Gus Till, last year for 13. So I think they could be tempted by a bit of around 20 million. And look, I don't think he's quite ready for Chelsea yet. I'd probably wait another year. So potentially maybe not that useful this summer, but definitely a player to keep an eye on going forward. And with the potential to potentially, you know, outgrow Chilwell as well. So Owen Vindal, definitely one to keep an eye on.
Well, it's not just Chelsea looking. I mean, like, Spurs are going to be looking for full-back reinforcements this summer. Obviously, as you go lower down the table as well, you get clubs like Southampton who'll be wanting to refresh those positions too. The guy I've got is someone we've spoken about a lot. I think we've kind of talked about left-backs quite a bit in the past, and I still think that Pervis Estupiñán is probably one of the best prospects out there.
For sure.
22-year-old Ecuadorian on loan at Osasuna from Watford. So you are going to have to negotiate with the Potsy to try and get him out of there. But his numbers in a tough league, you know, this is in La Liga, they are very, very good indeed. 4.5 tackles and interceptions per 90, 1.3 key passes, so more than Chilwell there, and 1.9 dribbles. He's about the same height as Chilwell, I think. But I was actually looking at his pressing numbers. They're extremely strong. And he's a really strong progressive passer as well. I think I had him in the top 10 in La Liga for progressive passes. So those are passes that move the team, I think, at least 15 yards up the field. So obviously it helps if you're playing deep to do that. It's harder to do that when you're playing about 18 yards from goal. But very, very impressive from him. And it looks like if nobody comes in with a big bid for him, you'd expect him to go straight into the Watford lineup next season, I'd have thought. But certainly if I was Spurs, I'd be taking a look at Estupinan or someone like that. And I think quite a few clubs are going to be sniffing around because he's probably the outstanding prospect in this position.
Yeah, for sure.
But I like Vindal. I hadn't really heard of him, so I'm quite excited about him.
Yeah, I mean, it's an exciting prospect. I was just thinking of other Premier League teams. I mean, Wolves don't have that much depth at left back either.
Even Liverpool.
Leighton Baines might well retire this summer. So Luca Digne might need a backup or someone to compete for his spot because he probably hasn't hit the heights of his first year necessarily at Everton. So I think there's plenty of Premier League clubs and clubs throughout Europe that'll be looking for left backs.
Yeah, definitely. So shall we move on to one of the really big hitters? Should we move on to Jadon Sancho?
Let's do it.
Like, because obviously everyone would love to sign Jadon Sancho this summer. He's been linked with Real Madrid, Man United, Liverpool, Chelsea. I think we assume Chelsea are kind of out of it and Liverpool too. But Real Madrid rumours have been getting stronger and stronger and stronger lately. And look, to be fair, it's hard to find cheap alternatives to Sancho because if you are a young forward who creates loads of chances, completes loads of dribbles and finishes at a high rate, chances are everyone's heard of you. And I also thought we should probably leave out Emiliano Buendia because we've spoken about him so much. But I thought, I don't know, you were probably the man to go to on this because you have produced some incredible who scored, I don't even know what the word would be, but like uncut gems from the depths of football stats Twitter and the web. What have you got for this one?
Well, I'm not as proud of this one as some of the others I've found. He's more well known than some of those. But I was just thinking sort of in Serie A that Kulusevski's obviously got a move. Orsolini's getting a lot of you know, tout as well. But actually the player that I'd probably be interested in for a much cheaper alternative to Jadon Sancho is Sassuolo's Domenico Berardi. So he's only 25. He's got 5 Italy caps to his name, but he's got 8 years of experience playing for Sassuolo, 7 of those in Serie A. And you've got to take it, when you listen to his stats, you've got to bear in mind the context of Sassuolo. So they've only finished in the top 10 once in those 7 years, which was 6th in 15-16. And in that time, his numbers are really, really incredible. So it's 64 goals and 42 assists in 197 Serie A games, which is 0.5 goal contributions per game for, as I said, a middling side. This year, 20 Serie A games, 9 goals, 5 assists. But look, like his per 90 numbers are quite frightening. 4.5 shots, 1.9 key passes, 1.6 dribbles. So a very different style of player to Sancho, who's going to take a man on, who's very happy, who's much faster, much more dangerous in tight spaces. But in terms of, you know, pure just upping the shot volume of your side, I think Berardi would be a much cheaper and just as an effective option for that alone. Because we have seen Sancho, although his finishing has been phenomenal this year, he's actually overperformed his expected goals by quite a bit. And Berardi's working at 0.6 expected goals and assists per 90, which is about, it's probably about 0.3 less than Sancho, I would have thought. So it is definitely a drop down, but you'd get, I think he'd cost about half as much. And only Hamed Traore and Francisco Caputo are contributing more than 0.4. So he's really carrying Sassuolo. The only negative is he has spent so long at Sassuolo and his contract runs until 2024. So that makes me think that he's like a one club man. He's pretty, you know, set in his ways at Sassuolo. He's enjoying being the sort of totem of their attacking play. And might not be that keen on a move, but he's valued at just £70 million. So if you could get him for about 35, I think that's a pretty good option. And one that a lot of clubs should consider. I'm always baffled why no clubs have really gone in for him. Maybe someone in the comments can let me know what's turning them away. But yeah, Berardi, definitely one to consider for me anyway.
Well, I think he did have one season, right, where he had pretty bad injuries. But when you think that I still think that one of his best seasons was when he was about 20. And it's really staggering he didn't get a move at the end of that because he had such good goal and assist numbers that season. I mean, it's so hard to find guys putting up big numbers at that age.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he, as you say, he went into the first team at 18 and was contributing big at that time for the first sort of 4 or 5 years and continues to do so. So his consistency, I mean, his consistency is incredible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I've got guys who are kind of at the other end of the experience scale. Well, I suppose there are rumours that Ousmane Dembele would be available for a cut price fee this summer. And despite his injury issues, I think that that's probably something you have to think about.
Mm.
If you can get him for under 60 mil and Jadon Sancho's going to cost like 150, I think you have to at least think about that. You know, at least have a medical and see what sort of state he's in. Because he's another guy who obviously has had absolutely insane creative numbers in the past. He's a great dribbler. He's incredibly fast. He can play on both sides. He can press as well. So I think he'd be a guy. Malcolm, too. I mean, Malcolm, much like Sancho, put up big key pass numbers when he was in France. And he's played very, very little this season in Russia.
Yeah, I
think
he's really been following.
300 minutes. I think he's got about 300 minutes.
Really?
He's barely played at all. And so obviously that's a risk. He's pretty much sat out 2 years of football now. But he's so young that I still think it'd be worth a risk if you can get him for a cut price fee. Again, like big dribble numbers and much more of a shot monster than somebody like Sancho, though also a little bit less discerning about the shots he takes, shall we say. But the guys I've got here are ones who are really in their first seasons making an impact. So I've got Munir Chuia, who is a 21-year-old Frenchman playing in Ligue 1 with Dijon. He can play across the front line, but mostly plays off the left. He's played on the right. He's also played as a 10 this season. And he is currently creating a similar number of chances per game as Sancho, 2.6 per 90 to Sancho's 2.8, though they are of a much poorer standard. And that's partially because of the people he's playing with and because of the way the team plays. But he's on 0.4 expected goals and assists per 90. Sancho's on 0.9 right now. But then again, Sancho was on 0.6 last season and 0.6 the season before. So it's not actually that big a step up. Like, Sancho overperformed a lot last season. He's overperforming again this year. But it does show how quickly you can take steps forward at this kind of age. Anyway, Chuia, he's got 4 goals. He doesn't have any assists, but expected goals says he should have 4 assists. So that's really down to the quality of his teammates finishing that has limited his kind of goal output. And given that Dijon are 16th, or were 16th when the season was cancelled, 3 points above the drop, the third lowest scorers in France, I think that's pretty impressive. 2.3 shots a game, that's slightly ahead of Sancho on 2.2. And also, because he's been playing on the wing, his defensive numbers are great. He's got 3 tackles and interceptions per 90, which
wow.
For a young forward is something we so rarely see. And dribbles-wise, he's already one of the best in Europe. He's completing 4.2 dribbles per 90. This is in his first season in Ligue 1. 4.2 dribbles per 90, which is 8th in Europe. And of the 7 players completing more dribbles per 90 than him, only Messi and Neymar have a better success rate than him on 63%.
Fair enough. I can see why everyone's been DMing me on Twitter saying, check this guy out. And I just haven't had the time. Amazing.
Yeah, I think I looked at his goal numbers and I was like, whatever. And then when I started looking into it, I was like, wow, this guy's actually pretty special. He cost them 3 million quid last summer. So I think that they're not going to want to sell him. But if you went in with an offer of maybe 25, I think you've probably got a pretty good shot of getting him. I think you'll certainly get him for sub 30.
Do you remember where he was playing pre-Dijon? Was it a Ligue 1
no,
club?
No, I don't.
No, fair.
No, it was in Ligue 2.
Oh, okay.
So this was his move up to the big time. So I think that he's definitely an interesting candidate, and he's already been linked with teams like Southampton and Chelsea. Weird combination there. The other guy I think is Moussa Diaby at Leverkusen.
Oh, yeah.
He's obviously 20 years old, 4 goals and 5 assists in 1,400 minutes at the time of recording. That probably will have changed this weekend. 0.6 expected goals and assists per 90, so the same as Sancho in the 2 seasons before this. His numbers, his raw numbers aren't that impressive. It's like 2 shots, 1.6 key passes a game. But the quality of the chances he's taking or creating for his teammates are very, very high. 3.8 dribbles per 90, again, with about a 2/3 success rate. So very, very good. He only cost them 14 mil. And I think that if you were to pay 3 times that this summer, that would still be, what, a third of what we'd expect Sancho to cost?
Yeah.
So I think that he'd definitely be an interesting candidate. And again, we've seen Arsenal linked with him in the last couple of weeks. So, Dukes, if you had to go for one of these and say you were Man United and it turned out you couldn't get Sancho, you just couldn't pay for him this summer, Who would you go for?
I think definitely Moussa Diaby, to be honest. I think Berardi slightly concerns me. No one else has gone for him, at least in a big way. Moussa Diaby, I just love watching him play. I think the way he started the season pretty much on the bench and struggled to break into the team and then really got his chance around sort of November time, completely superseding Leon Bailey in the pecking order of that club, playing in a variety of positions on both wings as well, in a variety of systems as well under Petr Bosz, because we know that he likes to alternate between, you know, a 3-4-3 and various other combinations of that. And I just think he's really intelligent in the way he picks up positions, the way he can thread attacks, and lightning fast as well. And I could actually see him being moulded into a very talented player. He's probably not obviously at Sancho levels just yet, but there's no reason that he couldn't be in a few years. So I'm really excited about Moussa Diaby.
Well, especially now, you know, he's got experience playing in a pressing team. Like, he's played under Tuchel, he's played under Bosz. Like, that's got to count for something. So yeah, I completely agree. Like, Diaby's the guy who's like ready to step up, right? Whereas you can imagine Shria having another couple of years in Ligue 1 or maybe going to a Southampton and then making the next step when he's 23, 24.
For sure.
So, shall we move on to Thomas Partey in the middle of the park?
I'd say
he's probably the highest profile sort of DM people are talking about this summer. I guess people are talking about Jorginho and Pjanic and Arthur, but none of those are really DMs in the way that Thomas Partey is. Obviously, great defensive numbers this season. Really good progressive passer. Dribbling is phenomenal. Like, he can just do a bit of everything in the centre of the park, as shown by the fact that for years I didn't really know what position he played, because I remember him coming on in the Champions League final and playing as like an auxiliary centre forward. And he's played right back. I think he's played centre back. He's played every midfield spot. Heavily linked with Arsenal, but he's going to cost his buyout, which is about 50 mil. He's 26, which is fine, but you do imagine that if you were willing to get somebody a bit older or a bit younger, you could probably pay a bit less. So, Dukes, do you have somebody who you like as a Thomas Partey alternative?
Yeah, well, I'm just really pleased that this guy has sort of turned around his career after such a damaging year in the Premier League. It's Andre Frank Zambo and Gisa, who, you know, was picked up by Fulham, came in with a big reputation, and it didn't really happen for him at Fulham. I actually thought he played fine compared to a lot of their other summer signings that year. But he's gone to Villarreal on loan from Fulham, and he's played a lot more of an attacking role than Partey this season. But like Partey, he's historically been a DM, and, you know, he's an excellent dribbler. He's a good progressive passer. He's just an all-round good player, and he's, you know, carries a physical threat with him as well. He's a very tall guy as well. So this year, 4.5 tackles and interceptions per 90. Partey's actually at 4.2. And he's got a ridiculous 84% dribble success rate. And that's roughly the same as Europe's best dribbling midfielders, Ndombele and Kovacic. Hopefully, if he does get a move, he'll be more appreciated than Ndombele at least. Passes into the final third, he's at 4.4, which is some way off Partey's 6.6. But in fairness, Anguissa at Villarreal is playing alongside Cazorla. Everyone knows what sort of role he's been given at Villarreal this year and how devastating he's been in the final third. And he's actually seventh in La Liga for that. So that probably takes away from Anguissa's numbers slightly. And he's a pretty good presser too. I mean, he's at 22 pressures a game to Partey's 15. And considering, I don't have it to hand, but I wouldn't have thought Villarreal averaged that much more possession than Atleti. So he might be around 15 to 25 million euros. And still just 25, so he could be a bargain. And it has been pleasing to see his recovery this year.
Yeah, I think he's been linked with Real Madrid a lot lately, and I would love to see that happen. Like, seriously, I mean, his defensive numbers were always pretty spectacular. Like, in his last season at Marseille, I think it was nearly six a game. But to be putting out Thomas Partey level defensive work and over three dribbles a match and be a good passer, like, I was actually watching a compilation of him yesterday, and some of the turns, like the thing I love about him is obviously his match awareness, like the intelligence to know when he should sit, when he should press, when he can run, when he should pass. Like he just seems to know exactly what he should be doing and have a really good sense for those like key moments, you know, when somebody has taken slightly too heavy a touch or when he sees space in front of him and knows that he can get past. But there was one where he like flicks the ball over his head inside the opponent's penalty area and skins two guys. It was so dirty. I was like, you shouldn't touch your face after watching it. It was that good. I really, really love him, and I completely agree. Like, it's been great to see him kind of turn around the perception of him after that season at Fulham. And it would be amazing to see him go and get a move to a big club. Like, I mean, if say Partey left Atleti and they went and got Anguissa, I think they'd be getting, I wouldn't necessarily say a better player, but they'd be getting a more versatile player, I think, is fair to say. And I think that he'd just be, there's almost nobody in the world who couldn't get some use out of Anguissa, whether you want somebody who's going to sit deep. You know, like if Man United wanted a DM, they could definitely play him there. But if you wanted a box-to-box player and you were, say, Arsenal and you couldn't afford Partey, then getting Anguissa would be great. I mean, the other guy I've got is Ismail Benacer, who I think last summer I was saying Arsenal supposedly had a 10 million euro buyback on this guy from Empoli. And I was like, just do it. Just do it. Like, and we've probably ended up paying about the same amount in loan fee and wages for Dani Ceballos. But Benacer went to Milan and has been, I'd say, comfortably their player of the season, which admittedly is not saying all that much, but he's been very, very good. He's 21. 4.4 tackles and interceptions per 90. As Dougs has already said, that's slightly above Partey. 3.3 dribbles a game at an 83% success rate. So pretty much identical to Anguissa and guys like Kovacic. 6 passes into the final third a game. Very close to Partey there. 24 pressures above Anguissa and Partey. And of course, he's very young. You know, 4 years younger than Anguissa, 5 years younger than Partey. The only issue here is that I think he probably cost quite a bit more because Fulham aren't going to be able to afford Anguissa. They're going to have to sell him. Like, that was why they loaned him out to Villarreal this season. So they're going to have to sell him. Benacer, he's at Milan. Milan have enough money to say no. They paid 16 mil for him last year. I think if you want him this year, they're going to ask for 60, 70. So I'm not sure I necessarily see that happening. But Ibrahim Songare as well at Toulouse is obviously a shout as well. Another good dribbler, good passer. Doesn't have quite the same volume of those things, but is much more defensive, I'd say, than any of the players we've really spoken about. Huge tackle and interception numbers, and should be available for cheap with Toulouse getting relegated.
Yeah, I saw. Going back to Benacer quickly, I saw him being linked with Man City this week, actually, which is quite interesting. Quite a few interesting links with Man City as well. I saw that Bayern are considering putting Luca Hernandez in the Sané deal, plus a bit of cash, which I actually think would be quite attractive. For Man City, if you've got to lose Sané, get 40 million and Luca Hernandez, who can play at left back, one of your problem positions, and crucially centre back, one of your problem positions. I actually think that'd be a very good deal because it's not really their attack that they need to sort out. I don't think Man City need to go out necessarily and get a 60, 70 million pound winger to replace Sané. I'd actually look to reinvest that money in defence because their attack this year was great. It just was let down at the other end by some shambolic sort of individual mistakes at centre-back and you know, across the back line. So I think, yeah, Luca Hernandez for Sané and a bit of cash would be great.
Well, yeah, I mean, Sterling has had a bit of a down year finishing-wise. I think he's got like 11 goals and he's got like 12 goals and assists from something like 19 expected goals and assists. And Bernardo Silva's had quite a quiet season. Mahrez went off like a rocket but has slowed down considerably since then. Gabi Jesus continues to underperform his expected goals for whatever reason. So yeah, I agree. The attack is probably fine. I don't know that. But if Bayern do that, they only paid 70 mil for Luca Hernandez however long ago. He's got years left on his contract. If they were to swap him and like 40 mil for Sané, they're valuing 1 year of Sané's contract because he's out of contract next year at 110 mil minimum.
To be fair, I included the 40 mil. That was a made up figure in my head. I heard cash plus Luca Hernandez. So it might end up being sort of 20, 25. I just think it's quite an attractive option for City. And obviously Bayern with Alaba emerging as such a good left-sided centre-back with Alphonso Davies going from strength to strength at left-back. Luca Hernandez's future, you know, looks a bit shady now at Bayern.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I kind of forgot about the Alphonso Davies factor. God, yeah, maybe that would work out for everyone. And then also he'd be on the same side as Laporte. And obviously, you know, like they speak the same languages. So that might work out quite nicely too.
He might even be able to persuade Deschamps to cap Laporte as well. So we'll see.
Well, somebody probably should cap Laporte at some point. Yeah. Like, he's a pretty good player. Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, any of these guys that we talked about would be a good option in the midfield. I think they're all kind of Swiss Army knives. We're seeing many more of these players than we used to. Like 6 or 7 years ago, it was really rare that someone like Moussa Dembélé combined big defensive output with solid passing, with exceptional dribbling. And now there aren't a lot of them, but there are more of these guys around. And I think maybe we're starting to see, you know, the value of having somebody who's actually a bit more mobile in the centre of the park as teams become more pressing reliant. So I would love to see any of these guys go to a big club this summer, because frankly, I mean, Bennacer, I suppose he's technically at a big club, but like...
Not really. Milan.
sorry, Menez. furious about that.
Menez okay, is unsubscribed.
He'll never unsubscribe. How dare you? Right, let's move on to our final guy, which is Kalidou Koulibaly. And this is difficult. We've often talked about how difficult it is to find centre-backs. He's been linked with Man United, Chelsea, Everton, hilariously enough, and Real Madrid. I like Koulibaly, though I think I am probably the most critical of him at Football Daily. I think that's just because of his age. Like, I look at him and I think, yeah, you can sign him now and you maybe get 3 or 4 years, maybe. But you maybe don't. You maybe get 2 years. And then he starts to get injured because he'll hit 30, 31. What makes him special, right, is his defending, is his passing. Like, he's a good defender. He's great in the air because he's massive. But what's really special about him is his technical ability. Like, he's a very intelligent player, really good distributor. So, is there anybody that you like in this role? Is there somebody who you think would be a good alternative to the, whatever, 90 mil or something that Koulibaly would presumably cost?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this guy is skill level on Koulibaly level, but he's definitely got age on his side. He's got potential on his side. It's Ruben Dias, the 23-year-old Benfica centre-back. Already capped 17 times by Portugal, 124 Benfica appearances to his name at 23. So, a lot of experience at that level. At least 30 appearances in each of the last three seasons. He actually made 55 last year as Benfica won the league and reached the quarterfinals of the Europa. Hasn't missed a single minute of league action so far this year, along with their goalkeeper. So fitness isn't an issue, and they're currently 1 point behind Porto with a game in hand. So again, he's being involved in you know, title challenges, in title races, you know, the business end of the season, as it were. This season, his numbers look a bit like this. So 24 league appearances, 2 goals, 1 assist. That's kind of irrelevant, but just thought I'd put it in anyway. 2.2 tackles and interceptions per 90 with an 81% completion rate. Now, anything above sort of 75% for tackle success rate is really pretty special. So 81%, albeit in an inferior league, is pretty good as well. And he actually hasn't been dribbled past in any of his 8 Europa League and Champions League appearances this season. Now, I'm always a little bit sceptical about this hasn't been dribbled past. It was like when Van Dijk wasn't dribbled past for a season, because I don't think it quite takes into account, you know, if you get beaten to a ball and they quickly pass it on. I mean, you know, to get dribbled past is quite rare as who scored count it. So I wouldn't take too much into that, but he's a very solid defender. The only downside of his game, I think, is his aerial ability. So he's 6'2". But only wins about 55% of his aerial duels in Portugal, which isn't great. And that hasn't really got much better throughout the years, and hasn't got, you know, he's not had a down year in the air either. So potentially needs to work on that. But his passing is really very good. So 64 passes a game, 89% pass accuracy. And, you know, Benfica look for him to build all their, you know, play from the back through. All goes through Ruben Dias. And it's no surprise that he's been linked with a whole host of clubs over the last few years. Man United, you know, I think Real Madrid at some stage were looking at him, I think last year before they got Eder Militao out of Porto. And he wouldn't be the worst option for a few clubs as a sort of, maybe as an understudy for the first year or two. And then look to, you know, blood him into the team a bit further down the line. The only issue is his contract runs until 2024. and he's already valued at 28 million. And I think they were talking for about 50 million last summer. But we've seen with Benfica, you know, because of the finances of the Portuguese league, you know, with Edison, Victor Lindelof, etc., they can be brought into a deal around the 40 million mark. So, you know, potentially with, you know, COVID-19, they might be tempted to drop their asking price a little bit. But Ruben Dias, he's not Koulibaly yet, but I think he could be. So just give him some time. And yeah, already has that range of passing as well. 5.3 long balls per game, which is one of the highest in Portugal for a non-goalkeeper. So definitely one to keep an eye on.
Well, and Koulibaly wasn't Koulibaly at his age either. I mean, like, obviously, players can often be good before we take notice of them, but it was really only in the kind of Sarri era at Napoli that he started to come to public attention. Mm. And by then, he was already 25, 26. So it does take a while for defenders to mature. But one of the reasons it's so difficult for us, right, to talk about how good defenders are is because it often takes quite a lot of knowledge about how the team plays, like what they're asking of their defenders, how much protection they have around them from fullbacks and midfielders, to kind of gauge how good a job they're doing. So, for example, Koulibaly this year is making 4.2 tackles and interceptions a game, which sounds good, but I don't necessarily want my centre-backs that exposed all the time. And last year it was at 2.9, and the year before it was 2.8, but I'd say he was probably better 2 years ago than he is now. So it does show the way that these numbers are kind of variable depending on the system they're playing in. And so the guy I've gone for is Jonathan Tah, who I think is... the fact that he's been a regular in pressing systems under Petr Bosz and under Roger Schmidt, I think is a really, really good sign. And he's still only 24 years old. He's obviously been linked with a move away from Bayer Leverkusen for years. Size-wise, he's very similar to Koulibaly. He's 6'5". Though he's not... He's a bit quicker, I'd say, than Koulibaly. A bit quicker over the ground, which is something that you really kind of want from a centre-back now. Like, that's where I understand what you were saying about the dribble pass thing, because I do think some of these stats are kind of variable, in the same way that you can make a tackle where you technically take the ball, but the ball could still go to an opponent.
For sure.
You know, it's not quite the same thing. It's just like whether you took the ball when you made the tackle. But Tah, I think that he's rarely dribble passed as well. And I think in his case, it's something to do with how fast he is over the ground. Because inevitably, when you're playing a pressing system, you're going to have to chase back kind of a lot. No matter how intelligent you are, no matter how good your reading of the game, there's going to be a certain amount of recovery pace required, just because Leverkusen are quite open and they are quite aggressive. Passing wise, I think he's got the right kind of minerals to be a Koulibaly alternative or replacement. 4.6 final third entries per game. Koulibaly's at 4.7, and nearly 5 progressive passes overall. Koulibaly's at about 6. Aerial wins, he's probably one of the best guys around Tah. 71% of his aerial duels he wins, compared to Koulibaly, who wins 61%. So that's really impressive. And yeah, like we said, he's been linked to Spurs, Arsenal, Man United, Liverpool, all of those guys in the past. I think he'd actually be quite interesting for almost any of them. I think he'd definitely be good enough to go to a club like Liverpool and at least be rotation. And frankly, I think I could play centre-back next to Van Dijk and with those full-backs around me, and I'd probably be all right. Like, not great in the air, but you know, the anticipation would be there.
Yeah.
So, I also just kind of want Jonathan Tah to get moved. To a certain degree, with, like, wingers or midfielders or whatever, I kind of think, I know how good you are. And if you get a move to another club and it doesn't work out, it's probably because it wasn't the right fit, or you were used incorrectly, or there was an injury. With centre-backs, I kind of always want them to get moves because I think I actually want to know how good you are. I have no idea. Like, I think you're great, but maybe you're not. And so I kind of am curious about Jonathan Tah, because there's, on paper, there's nothing really missing from his game. And so it'd be nice to see whether that's actually true.
Yeah.
You know?
He just always, whenever I watch him play, he's just a big, big unit. He's just absolutely colossal. But yeah, as you say, doesn't, you know, lose anything. You know, his touch, you know, in tight spaces is pretty good. When he's under pressure, he's pretty good. You know, he doesn't have bad pace. So I think he's a really exciting prospect and probably one of the best German centre-backs coming through in a position of, you know, incredible strength for them. Similar to France, there's just so many German centre-backs.
Mm. Well, I think as well, I think one of the things as well that makes Tah look really big is he's got a really tiny head.
Yeah, like, but I think massive shoulders.
Yeah, I remember them saying this on like America's Next Top Model years ago. They were just like, you know what? Models have really small heads because it makes their bodies look longer. And it's actually true. Like if you see a picture of like Naomi Campbell from back in the day or like Cindy Crawford, you're like, Jesus, their heads are tiny. And with Jonathan Tarr, it's like he's got this tiny head like on top of like he looks like the Iron Giant. He's got really broad shoulders, but a tiny little head.
I thought you were going to say that Tarr featured on America's Next Top Model. And I was like, here we go. Go on, Jonathan. Go for it.
I mean, he's definitely got the frame for it, but I'm not sure that he would be able. I'm not sure that he probably has the look.
No.
The lookbook.
Probably not what they're looking for, no.
Well, it really depends whether he can walk. That's the main thing. That, like, I don't know whether he can like give face. But I think that's probably it. These are the replacements that we've got. So just before we finish, Dukes, I wanted to ask you a little anything but football question.
Oh, sure.
Is there anything you've been reading, watching, playing that you've been excited about in lockdown that you can recommend to the viewers slash listeners?
I wouldn't recommend what I've been playing. I've been playing a lot of Football Manager, so stay clear of that because, you know, try and live a more, you know, nourishing, intellectually stimulating life. But what have I been watching? So I've been, we started the Jeffrey Epstein Filthy Rich this week, which was pretty hard to watch, actually. We've done two episodes, I think. I'm not actually sure whether I'm going to finish it. You kind of get quite a good idea of it by the first episode, really. But I would recommend that in a way. It's pretty harrowing. The Last Dance I'm watching as well, which I'm really enjoying. And then Grace and I have just started, I've never watched it before, but started Modern Family. Is just easy laughs. So that's what I've been watching. And then in terms of what I've been reading, I've been restarted. So I got Sapiens about 6 or 7 months ago and started it on a plane when I was really tired and was just like, oh no, this is too much for me. But now I've picked it back up in lockdown and I'm actually really enjoying it, hearing how there was 2-ton wombats in Australia prior to humans arriving in Australia. Pretty mental.
Wow.
So, yeah, we've done some real damage to the Earth over the years, and we continue to do so, us humans. So read all about that in Sapiens. And he's a very intelligent guy. I can't quite pronounce his name, but he knows what he's talking about.
Cool. Good recommendations, Deegs.
Thank you.
I've watched Dave, the Little Dicky sitcom, which is actually available on iPlayer, which is...
I haven't heard of that.
It's really good. Like I kind of remember Little Dicky from like, I think when I was at university, like just kind of like comedy rap, which I'm always a little bit like on the fence about, but I did enjoy him. And now he's made a sitcom, which is genuinely quite touching and really funny.
Oh, nice.
What am I reading? Oh, I'm reading London Fields by Martin Amis, which like, I mean, it's a bit of a trudge. Like I feel like quite often you get to that point with a book where the end is in sight. You know, it's the way you feel on a Friday morning when you're like, okay, I've got 100 pages left of this thing. I now, no matter how good it is, I now want it to be over.
Yeah.
And think about what's next. So I'm kind of at that point with it. And also, like, the copy I've got, it's incredibly 90s looking. And the writing is so small. So it's like 450 pages. But I know that if the writing was, like, spaced out like normal, like a normal book, it'd be like 700, and I would rather read the 700 page book because as I get more and more tired at night, I'm just like,
yeah, for sure. Plus it's more satisfying just to be keep on flicking, you know. Yeah, like, watch me go.
Also, I'm reading Harry Potter in French.
Oh, nice.
Which one? Just the first one. It's the only one we've got in the house, and I just picked it up the other day, and it's between the fact that I obviously know the book very well and like my French has improved, I guess, like it's actually pretty manageable.
Nice.
Because if there's a bit where you're not sure what the word is or whatever, you can kind of guess it from context because you've like read the book.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's quite good fun.
Love a bit of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I think we're probably approaching the time where I'm due a reread. I haven't reread them in like years. Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, dude.
Absolute pleasure.
And thank you guys very much for listening or watching. Remember to go to beer52.com/extra. And for $5.95, you can get 8 craft beers. Very exciting times. I don't know, Dukes, is there anything that we need to point to? I'm just thinking.
Go and check out all the Everything You Need to Knows on Football Daily. I think they are probably our best style of videos. And yeah, they are well worth watching. I think people have made massive effort on the scripts and on the visuals as well, so they definitely deserve a lot of love.
Completely agree. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.
It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!